So at What's in Wheels, we are continually bringing you leaders in industry about different developments in the EV space. And being What's in Wheels about cars, who better to introduce than Mr. Ford himself, John Ford from Aversa. Aversa have been up to some very interesting things in the electrification space in commercial. And that's what we're going to be talking to John about this morning. John, welcome to What's in Wheels.
Thank you very much for having me.
Tell us about Aversa and what you guys have been up to in the exciting, wacky, wild field of commercial electrification in the EV space.
Yeah, no, thank you very much. Look, Aversa is a fleet-focused electrification business. I think in the last couple of years, you know, people have started realizing that, you know, e-mobility is actually a thing. They've started seeing passenger vehicles all around the roads. And I think what people have missed, unfortunately, is that where do you have the biggest impact? And, well, we obviously have the answer to that, and that is the commercial space, the logistics space specifically. And so Aversa is one of the few fleet-focused and only fleet-focused businesses that do exactly that.
So in our chats, we were talking about what it is to become a fleet-focused EV enabler, if I can loosely describe your business in those terms. And very interestingly to me, you said it's not a case of you just go ahead and electrify everything. That doesn't necessarily work. It's a case of trying to find all the square pegs and all the square holes and aligning with all the round pegs and all the round holes and getting every peg into the right hole. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit more about the energy mix, the difficulties or the challenges that you face in different fleet environments, and where EV sort of plugs into the gaps.
100%. Yeah, I think again also with this electrification thing being so new, people want to run into it and they say, the vehicles on the market, let's apply them in the way we used to apply diesel or petrol vehicles. And unfortunately, that's not how it needs to be done. You know, people, like you say, believe it's a vehicle. It looks just like the other one. So it should do exactly what the other one does and hopefully better. But you should look at it differently in that as a fleet, you've got different vehicle types doing different routes, being used for different loads. And so based on all these variables, you need to select the right types of vehicles for that application. But not only that, you've got this extra layer in that your energy source is completely different. You're not using your traditional diesel or petrol, but in actual fact, you are using electricity. And where do we get our electricity from? As well, potentially multiple places. And the way one property gets the electricity is completely different to the way a different property does. So depot A from one company will possibly have a completely different cost structure and availability of power to depot B that belongs to the exact same company. And you need to analyze these things. You need to understand what are the characteristics. What's the possibility to actually upgrade this in the future if you need more power? What are the tariff structures involved? And all of that complexity is what actually gives you an indication on what your electrification potential is.
So it's highly customized, because I mean, what you said to me there struck a home immediately. For me, it's a case of understanding that, as you say, site A might only have a capability of this much for charging because the electricity supply to that particular site is constrained. But site B, which may be next door to it, may have that much capacity. So how you move your fleet around, obviously you want to put it where you have capacity, and optimizing your fleet around that plays into the whole energy mix. And that's where, you need someone who knows what they're doing to be able to structure all that in place. And that's what you guys do.
And the big thing about that is to make sure that what you actually end up doing is the most effective overall fleet layout, if I can put it like that. Because in some
areas, architecture.
Yes. Yeah. Some areas, diesel will be king for a while still. In some areas, electric is already a no-brainer, and you want to make sure that you use the right technology in the right place for your particular operation so you have overall efficiency.
Pick the low-hanging fruit first, bank that as a win, identify where you think diesel might be phased out, work towards that as you go along.
And exactly to your point there, what we've seen with our customers now is when you start with the low-hanging fruit, you immediately materialize the gains there.
Yeah.
You see how business fundamentals actually is the main reason for change. You see you actually lowering your total cost of ownership, and so therefore you start looking for where else can we use this technology best. And that gives you all the data to then plan how we take that next step.
To my eternal credit, I've always said the driver of EV adoption will always come down to the commercial rands and cents in the bank. When EV costs the same as ICE, it's a no-brainer. We've seen that in every country around the world, Norway specifically, when they just priced EV as the same price as ICE, that's what sold and transitioned them to a 95% adoption rate across their market. John, just talk to me briefly about how Eskom fiddles into all of this before we get into the specific examples of where you've actually been electrifying fleets. So Eskom has different rate tariffs depending on your drawdowns and your demands. How does that impact, if you don't know what you're doing, on your overall electrical costs?
I'll answer this question in maybe a bit of an elaborate way, but I'll use an example to do so. So first of all, I just want to make sure that it does come across that electrifying does not necessarily mean it's going to be this complex thing, and where diesel right now is simple, electrification is going to be difficult.
Sure.
Not really. In actual fact, the whole purpose of Aversa as a business is to remove the volatility within logistics, which is the biggest problem they've got with internal combustion fleets at the moment. Now, when we look at a specific depot, it would fall within a specific municipality. That municipality will have a specific tariff structure. And depending on the property, the type of property it is, they will fall within a specific category of those tariff structures. Yeah. And so what we do is we will analyze the actual structure to see how much power we've got available to us, looking at actual infrastructure in the ground, sure, and at the property. But again, also understand, what's the cost implication? Because if we are going to, for example, charge a big truck, just to put it into perspective again, a conventional little hatchback, it's got a 60 kilowatt hour battery pack, maybe it can charge up to 100 kilowatts. If you look at a big truck tractor, you are probably looking at a battery size of anywhere from 300 kilowatt hours up to 600 kilowatt hours, wow, if not more. And again, charging speeds of 300 plus.
So your actual charging rates are much bigger.
Massive. Okay. And so our traditional grid infrastructure was never really designed for this, because it's also not necessarily consistent, right? You're going to plug in, it's going to charge, it'll charge it for a while, and it'll go down. And that's one truck. Imagine a fleet of vehicles, yes, at a particular depot.
Yes.
So you look at the actual hardware in the ground, you look at the actual financial tariffs that you're going to potentially push up. And what I mean by push up is that certain line items on that tariff bill might be something like a demand charge.
Okay.
Demand charge, in simplest form, is the peak amount of power that you pull from the grid during a particular time in the month. And they will charge you a particular rate based on that peak demand. So this could be a monthly amount over a 12-month rolling period, or it could just be for that particular month. But these costs.
So your cost per kilowatt hour is set at the peak demand. So if you plug all 10 of your trucks in at once, you're going to have a massive peak, and that's what you're going to be paying for that
particular
duration,
line
that
item.
Billing
so
item duration.
If I can actually maybe wow, this will actually okay, set the scene properly. If you look at a specific tariff, you will look at a time of use tariff where you've got peak rates, standard rates, and off-peak rates.
Yeah.
So depending on the time of day you charge or use power, there's a specific rate that you get charged. Then over and above that, remember that was usage.
Yeah.
You then have a demand charge. And that demand charge is a specific amount per kVA that you drew at a particular point in time. And that gets added on top of your actual usage. And there are more line items that we could get into.
Yeah, but okay.
But we'll leave it at that for now.
Point taken.
Yes.
It's still cheaper to use electricity than diesel, but you still don't want to pay more for your electricity than you absolutely have to. So I get the fact that there's a cost optimization that needs to be traded off.
And this is how you need to manage your charging strategy.
Yeah.
Because if we now start making this practical, you have a fleet of 10 vehicles. Overnight, they're completely fully charged. So you let them go out in the morning. Then in the afternoon, they come back. Now, we might have a standard rate over that time period. Maybe it's a peak time tariff. But the point is, ideally, in our environment and what we've seen, is you want to be using solar over lunchtime. You've got lots of solar radiation, and you can put that into your fleet. So you can then go and do that. And that's probably the cheapest way you could do that. Then they might go out for a second trip during the day. When they return at 5 or 6 o'clock, well, now the sun is not shining as it used to over lunchtime.
Annoying.
Exactly. But at the same time, your grid connection is probably going to be very expensive to use their power now because it's a peak time tariff. Yeah. And so therefore, you could have now used your battery storage that you've got. Because while your vehicles are out over the in the afternoon, you still have the sun shining,
sure,
and you can top up that battery. And so now there's an energy arbitrage play, and you can discharge your battery into that fleet. And then maybe later on at night, you know, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, you're on an off-peak tariff. And so therefore, it makes sense to slowly charge your vehicles overnight until the next day. And that is one example of a charging schedule and a charging strategy that would work for a particular customer. Although there are multiple strategies you could follow based on the operation and the depot.
Is there opportunity for excess energy to be generated to be fed back into the grid to offset your overall energy charges at the moment? I know it's a topic that is under some discussion, and I think Cape Town has rolled it out on the domestic front. Do you see this progressing for fleet owners, fleets, for example, that don't deliver on weekends? I'm not aware of any that don't, but I mean, for example, if they didn't deliver on weekends, they'd have all the capacity to generate all this energy, and if they can pump it back into the grid and get a couple of rands back. Is that something you see coming? Is that going to be part of the mix?
In certain municipalities, it's already possible outside of Cape Town well.
Okay.
I don't believe it's going to be absolutely game-changing.
So it's a little bit of extra on the side.
It's a little bit extra as well, and you are governed in certain areas, but how much solar you can actually install at your depot based on your actual substation size that you've got. So it's there, and it's a very nice benefit to have where it's allowed, and if you've got the right meters installed, again, they'll pay you less than what you pay, for
of
example.
Of course, but...
But every little bit helps. And 100%. I think the key thing, though, is that you're not going to do solar and batteries for that reason. But the main reason is that you have more use cases for it.
Yeah.
And I think this is the key thing people need to understand, in that when you go electric, there are savings. You can use those savings to expand your fleet or invest in solar and battery storage. And then that adds more savings to your total cost of ownership of your fleet. And it's a self-fulfilling cycle.
Yeah.
And I mean, from the numbers we've seen, we've gone through this process, we see that really does work.
That's a beautiful segue into a real-world example. Now, you've been working with this small little logistics company called Takealot, who I believe have split into two sort of divisions. You've now got it's Takealot Logistics Services, is it?
Was
it
Takealot Fulfillment Services?
Takealot Fulfillment Services, which now operates as a standalone logistics entity to the familiar Takealot brand, where they will do logistics for anybody. And you've been working with them. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. So we've been working with Takealot Fulfillment Services since 2022. They were one of the first few companies that were really willing to act and not just talk about electrification. And so back then, we started running trials with them, one truck, one charger, doing over 15,000 kilometers during that trial period. And we could see that we could prove the concept back then. Back then, it wasn't a matter of, oh, we know it works, but how do we make it work? It was, does electric work at all?
Yeah, yeah.
Were there OEMs that even offered electric commercial vehicles? No, we had to actually import one with a partner to actually achieve that. But during that trial period, we could all see that it was going to work. And from that first and initial test, we could get to our initial phase where we moved to 10 vehicles. And in that initial phase, again, we didn't necessarily add solar just yet. There were no batteries. We had 10 vehicles running on a couple of charging stations, and we saw real-world cost savings.
So that's like a genuine pilot. You kind of like one vehicle, just test to see what it kind of could look like.
Yes.
10 vehicles as a pilot. Okay, this is now delivering on the numbers.
The first month or two, we were actually in a negative total cost of ownership. And it was interesting because we knew what we modeled. We understood what the savings should be. But this is, again, the divide between theory and reality.
100%.
But within the first month, we provided the drivers with the right training. We understood how the chargers and the charging needed to be managed and when we need to charge it. And we built that custom-made strategy that we've mentioned earlier for their particular case. And that negative total cost of ownership result turned into an average of 14% saving.
Wow. Straight off the bat.
Straight off the bat. No solar, no batteries, 10 vehicles. 14% average.
For a fleet owner, that is significant. You can't ignore that.
And I don't think people should underestimate. I mean, 14%, that's a double-digit number within the logistics space. If anybody could materialize that type of savings to date, they would jump at it. And that was, again, right in the beginning. I mean, when we expanded even further on that, we moved from 10 vehicles to 21. We then started incorporating batteries and solar. And that TCO model all of a sudden jumped to 16% on average. We saw peaks of about 22% savings per month. And this is obviously based on factors like when the sun is shining most and when you can charge and all those types of things like utilization. But again, we can now see that with a 50-50% split of solar and grid, we had improved numbers on it and better utilization. The drivers also trusted it. And again, we could manage the infrastructure better because within the previous round, that initial phase, we saw the usage patterns and we started modeling when we integrate solar and battery, what's the sizing? When should we be charging it? I mean, again, we optimized that whole operation. And that brings us to more recent phases where we've got 35 vehicles running in the fleet. You know, we believe that by using 1.2 gigawatts of power per year now, and with solar powering that fleet of between 60 and 82%, we are going to see immense savings, averaging between 18 and 20%. And we anticipate, especially within recent, you know, happenings.
Yes, yes. that we can shenanigans see, in the East.
Put it like that. We could see in excess of 30% savings.
So that's really helping. What I like about these numbers is that they are not stratospheric. So we're sitting here and we're not discussing it's a 60% saving. Mm. It's not unrealistic. These are real world, modeled, measured, delivered TCOs. And I think that's a really important point for people to understand as well. So we're telling people what to understand. It's what we do at What's Moots. We tell you. But the fact of the matter is that it's not a get-rich-quick instant scheme. But 14% compounded over the lifespan of a vehicle is huge. I can see accountants who are sitting in their seats watching this going, do it.
Well, it's the difference between a company keeping their doors open versus not. At the moment, we are seeing the logistics space under immense pressure. Sure. They have got contracts that were set in stone where the cost and let's call it the risk premiums that they would have built into those contracts, no one accounted for what we're seeing at the moment.
Yeah.
And having gone electric, you're completely insulated. You don't have to worry about those risk premiums because your cost base that's usually quite volatile.
It's now flat.
Now is very, very predictable. And it will increase, right? I mean, we're going to see an over 8% increase with grid power. But it's predictable. It's not volatile. You can plan for it.
Yeah.
And at the same time, you can take control of your own energy source with solar and batteries.
It's a very exciting space to be in. I think you guys have achieved something quite impressive here. Thank you for coming to talk to us about it. And what's next for you guys? What's coming up that we should look out for? I know you're embargoed on a lot of stuff, but you know, just give us a hint.
Yes, well, what I can say is that we are working with a couple of well-known brands as well. They have been fantastic in recent times where they've taken this seriously. Again, also not just talking about it, but really wanting to move into action. And so, keep your eyes on the headlines. There will be a couple of interesting moves in the near future where we are going to see mass adoption of commercial vehicles and a big emphasis on how the energy that powers these fleets is managed. And Aversa will continue to focus exactly on that. We are a charging and energy expert, and we will work with all local OEMs and local logistics businesses to successfully transition their fleets to electric.
I look forward to it. One last question. And I always forget to ask my interviewees this. Is there anything I should have asked that you would have liked me to?
That is
nothing like putting you on the spot there. Is there anything you want to cover that I haven't thought about that you may want to bring to the attention of our dear and valued viewers? Other than the fact that they should probably be picking up the phone call and phoning you in an unashamed plug.
Look, I think the big thing is customers need to understand that this is a new space for them. And so there will be things that they run into that they feel is a gate and they can't climb over it.
Yeah.
But I can guarantee them that they are only hurdles. And we have been able to get over each and every hurdle that we've ever encountered. And our process of doing fleet feasibility studies before even requesting any chargers be installed or getting vehicles on a depot floor, it provides all the clarity that they will need to understand if it's going to work for them or not, and where it's going to work for them or not, and what does that model actually look like for them. And once we've done that, they'll know and feel confident to actually take that next step. And so I think the big thing is the technology is mature. Don't worry about those things. You can see it in various operations from the timber industry where there have been successful fleets running there.
Heavy duty mining.
To local operations doing consistent routes. Trust the technology and obviously make sure you've got the right partner involved in the charging side of things.
Well, your point to the maturing of the technology is something that actually drove home fairly recently, because it was brought to my attention that some people haven't driven EVs yet. You know, and it's such a second part of my nature now that I forget.
Yeah.
So thank you for mentioning the fact that the technology is mature, it has been proven, and it's here to stay, and it is the way of the future, because if those are the savings you're getting already, you know, the writing is on the wall. John, thank you very much for coming in and enlightening us with a fascinating discussion. I've enjoyed every moment of it.
Only a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks.